I opened up LinkedIn and there was, you know, spam. People say, hey, if I could do this for you. And I'm thinking, where do people learn that this is how to sell? That is not sales. It just chaps my ass and it makes me absolutely crazy because that's not sales. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it. Today, we're getting into something every sales team in 2026 needs to be using. I have Dave Goulis with us, co-founder and president of EasyDC 3PL, try saying that three times in a row, and a sales expert. Welcome, Dave, and thanks for being with me.
Hey, Carol. Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Let's start here. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so EasyDC 3PL, we provide warehousing, fulfillment, and transportation services for manufacturers and e-commerce brands. So if you have a product and you're selling it online and you don't want to rent a warehouse, manage staff, negotiate carrier rates, freight rates, install a bunch of expensive software, and do everything else that it takes to be self-sustaining as you do your own fulfillment, you would hire a company like us and outsource those functions to us.
Good, good. And I want to digress from my next question a minute because we started talking about something that I recently listened to and you mentioned that you just had happen today, which is theft in the supply chain of trucks. And I want to talk about that because that's actually a real thing in your industry. And I had seen something that Guy Fieri and his partner in a tequila business, I think it's Sammy Hagar, had two truck fulls of all their tequila diverted and stolen. I think they ended up getting one of them back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And it's, I was talking with my partner about this as far as the freight arm of the business, and he's been in this 20 years and he's never had it happen. I've only been doing the freight aspect a couple of years. I've never had it happen. And it's kind of like, you don't think it's going to happen to you. And then it does. And it's like, wow. It's just kind of surreal. So we're literally dealing with, trying to catch the bad guys at this point. It's still pretty fresh, but this all just unfolded today, which is kind of why I was late getting set up here and all that, as I mentioned to you. But we're dealing with the process and hopefully it'll be recovered. And if not, there's insurance. And this is just...
How is this happening as people are moving freight, Dave?
Yeah, there's... These bad actors are getting very sophisticated and then there's these loopholes that they exploit. And then, in this case, it looks like someone legitimately purchased the motor carrier number and then somehow it got into the hands of a bad actor and they had no intention of using that number legitimately. So they just went and stole as much as they could, as quick as they could. And by the time we realized there was a problem and filed the appropriate report, there was numerous other loads stolen under that same motor carrier number. And it's just, it's what happens. I guess it's called burning an MC, a motor carrier number is the tactic it's called. But terrible. And that's just part of the game.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, so let's jump in. When it comes to sales strategy, what's the one thing that you'd say that sales teams need to be successful as we close out 2025 and move into 2026?
Yeah, there's a number of ways you could phrase it, whether you call it content marketing, whether you call it personal branding, those are probably the two most common terms, authenticity, but it's particularly if you're in sales and if you're a founder, if you're leading a company, that just being visible and being out front with your thoughts and opinions is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly in the age of AI when there's so much fake stuff out there and there's so much generic stuff out there. The fact that you can get out there and differentiate yourself and really connect authentically as a human being to your audience is just a powerful way to sell. And it's, like you said, I think you used the word essential. It's just becoming so, so, so important, particularly as AI continues to evolve, I think.
Well, yeah. And I still, before this call, I was checking some messages and I opened up LinkedIn and there was, spam. already. You know, people say, hey, if I could do this for you. And I'm thinking, where do people learn that this is how to sell? Just cold pitching on LinkedIn. That is not sales. It just chaps my ass. And it makes me absolutely crazy because that's not sales.
I just did a post about it because, you know, I'm always thinking of ideas for content. And really some of the best ideas I get is because I get so many awful sales pitches being a founder and being out front. And the one, it seems like the same script. It's fake compliment, wild promise, and then demanding a meeting. And it's like, what?
That's exactly what I got from this guy. And I said, you might want to change your pitch because it's the same pitch I get from everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and it was funny
about vertical elevation, blah, 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 blah. It's so awesome. And, you know, if we could do this for you, and, you know, how about a meeting? like never. Never.
I don't know if you've tried this, but the crazy part is if you type in like AI, because I'll experiment, if you type in, write me a sales pitch, that's the kind of stuff that they'll come up with, right? And it's like, I don't know who thinks that works.
apparently some idiot that's training AI. I don't know. I'm not sure, you know. This is. I don't want to get off the topic of the problems with AI, of course, of which there are many. But that's certainly one of them is, you know, because, well, we know why, right? Garbage in, garbage out. So take us back to the beginning of the founding of the company and what inspired you to start EasyDC3PL. And please explain the name.
Well, there's actually a really funny story behind the name. And I don't know if I've ever even told this because I think it's funny at least. But so anyway, so we're in the pharmaceutical industry for a long time. And in our niche of the market, on the secondary market, you're dealing with independent pharmacies. Everything is medication. Everything goes overnight. Everything is urgent. Mm-hmm. And things go wrong all the time. It's just automatic. You have to have a very high-touch customer service approach and be able to solve problems in the fly to even survive in that business, right? So we're just used to that. And we knew several e-commerce brands that were having problems with their 3PL. And we just saw complacency where this big box 3PL would not respond and orders weren't shipping out and people were waiting days for a response. And it was just kind of just terrible. And we were looking for another vertical to be in. And we saw that. We said, you know, our brand of customer service would be perfect for this industry because it's just automatic. If a customer needs your help, you take care of them. And, you know, so that was the genesis, the idea behind starting the company. And so we just jumped in and did it, and we thought we knew logistics from our experience in the pharmaceutical industry. And then when we started a logistics company, we realized how much we didn't know about logistics. but again, we've come light years from that point 3 years ago. But the name, so when we started it, I said, okay, I'll come up with a name because I'm always got a lot of ideas and everything. And so we were trying to encapsulate, you know, what the name would be in terms of our offering. And so I had all these things written out and, you know, easy this, simple this, and I was like, I don't know. I don't really like any of them. And I showed them to my partner. I was like, this is what I got. Maybe you can come up with something. And he said, Easy DC. That's the name. I love it. That's got to be the name. You know, so like Easy Distribution Center is the kind of the thought behind it.
Right.
And then we added the 3PL because no one knew what Easy DC meant. Easy DC 3PL.
Well, there's still probably people out here who don't know what 3PL meant and it means. And for those who don't, that stands for third party logistics.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Right. So in case anybody's listening and, you know, to prevent you from having to Google it. So you, what you saw was a niche that wasn't being served. Is that it?
Yeah. And if you look at the history of logistics, and we saw this through the pharmaceutical industry, is when COVID hit, it really broke the supply chain, right? And there used to be predictability, there was complete unpredictability. And then there was a severe shift in the supply and demand. There was like super high demand and there was restricted supply. And then what it seemed to happen, at least in my opinion, a couple of years after that, when we got into it, is because there was such a lopsided supply-demand relationship that the people that had the supply got very complacent. And they were just, you know, kind of just used to this demand because that's how it was. And it was showing in the way they operate. And again, right, we've seen all types of ups and downs and market cycles within pharmaceuticals where products get short, then they get abundant and there's supply, demand. I mean, we've seen it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But the one thing we did know is what always works is taking care of your customers and, you know, communication and over communication and real customer service and solving problems and treating people like human beings and just having that responsibility. Like if someone places their trust in you and they're paying you to ship their products, store their products, and to service their account in whatever type of industry you're in, you respect that as a salesperson, as a business owner, whatever it is. And if there's a problem, you have an obligation to take care of your customers. And you don't just take it for granted and operate with this kind of laissez-faire attitude, like, I'll mm-hmm. get to it when I get to it. I mean, at least where we come from in the small business sector, right? So we saw this gap in the market and we thought that we could create a company and create an outstanding customer service that would stand out in a sea of complacency. That was the original vision for the company.
And is that still the vision for the company?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, right? We've learned a lot. We're growing. Mm-hmm. We're scaling. And yeah, that's certainly, and I'm not saying there's not great 3PLs. And for perspective, mm-hmm. there are 10,000 3PLs in the U.S. So there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of different niches. And there's a lot of different variables that determine why a particular brand would use a particular 3PL, whether it's location, oftentimes is very important, the type of product they're doing, the type of channel they're selling into, and a whole bunch more. And not to say, and I know many people in this industry, I have many friends that are 3PL owners, and there are some great companies out there, but so many of them, particularly what you would call the big box providers, they just don't offer that personalized real customer service that an emerging, growing brand would need to truly scale and be successful. And that's where we are different and we think we're a great fit. And we do, I mean, listen, our customers love us and for a reason. And we were continuing to kind of build out that model with real customer service, real personalized, you know, experience, an outstanding customer experience, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah, I agree. So you founded the company about 3 years ago. You have about 10 employees and you've just recently opened a second warehouse in Kentucky and both your warehouses are in Kentucky. So, and you're not.
Right.
And so I want to spend a little bit of time on the sort of thinking around that your warehouses are in a different part of the country than you are and, you know, how you go about managing, you know, as the founder, a remote workforce like that, that's all in pretty much in one place and you're somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, it's, Kentucky is an excellent central location, particularly if you're going to have one location. Oftentimes as 3PL scale, the multi-node approach is East Coast, West Coast or East Coast, West Coast, Midwest. Right. But for one location, Kentucky is an excellent option. And I mean, really it all comes down to great people. We have a very solid team there, phenomenal management. We just added another phenomenal piece to the team, actually. I mean, he didn't even start yet, but we just got him committed today. Well, the good part, too, is, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the book, you know, Traction and the whole EOS type model is having the right people in the right places, right? So my zone of genius has always been, you know, as a salesperson, I'm not a logistics operator, right? I'm not going to show you how to run a warehouse. You know, but I'm great at taking care of customers. I'm great at communicating the value. I'm great at making the outreach. And now I've really honed into creating content and doing all that. So I can do that from anywhere. And, you know, I travel a lot. I go to a lot of shows. But first and foremost, I'm a salesperson. So even if we're full, you know, in terms of the warehouse, I'm still prioritizing my sales activities through the day. I mean, that's just how I'm wired. So I mean, I can handle that aspect as well as other type of, you know, functions that don't require me to be in the warehouse. And we have a phenomenal team there. And again, that's the great part, too, about technology is we can be interconnected. We can have systems in place. We can communicate no matter where I am. And we have the team on the ground that does a great job.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about your off revolution, if in fact it has evolved over the last 3 years. You know, has what you sell, which is space, right? Storage space and delivery of that, correct?
Correct.
And who you sell to, has any of that changed since you all founded the company?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, again, funny, I did a post about this too, not long ago, but So very early on, right, because we're new to the logistics industry, you know, we hired consultants. Mm-hmm. And at one point in particular, a consultant said to me, like, Dave, listen, this is so simple. 3PL is just space and labor. That's all it is. Well, I get it. Conceptually, that makes sense. I don't agree, right? Because of course you need space and of course you need labor, but every one of those 10,000 3PLs has space and labor, and they're not nearly the same. It's the people right. behind it. It's the of culture course. Behind it. Yep. That makes all the difference in the world. So yeah, of course, right? Space and of course labor. And again, that's another advantage with Kentucky in terms of the real estate cost and the labor cost mm-hmm. as opposed to other areas. But also, we've learned tremendously in the beginning, right? When we were trying to fill up that space, I was chasing every deal. I was probably onboarding customers I shouldn't have. And we learned from those experiences, mm-hmm. certainly. And we were still trying to figure out who we were as a company and what we would accept, what we wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So we've grown leaps and bounds from that. But I don't want to say you have to learn that way. But I mean, but sometimes, like, you don't know how to do something right until you do it wrong, oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly my experience. And that's probably been a lot of my life experience. And that's okay, right? Because you're always moving forward. You're always correcting your mistakes. You're always learning from those mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you're always, but I certainly don't have a problem making a decision. And even if I make the wrong decision, I'll just make another decision and another decision and eventually get to the right decision.
You know, I've rarely talked to any founders, including myself, who have not made mistakes early on at selling to people they really should not have taken the deal. You know, everybody's like, you want revenue, and you end up taking things you probably should not have done. And you learn your lesson, and hopefully you learn your lesson and move on from there.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
What would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now, if anything?
Biggest bottleneck to growth. You know, I mean, sometimes it is the space. Sometimes it's just the pace of, you know, just the way the supply chain moves in terms of getting stuff in. You know, we're transferring a bunch of inventory over from someone else, and it's taking much longer than it was originally promised. So mm-hmm. that delays things. You know, we had a container that was supposed to be here 2 weeks ago. It literally just came in today, and it's so urgent to get the orders out by the end of the week. And there's like a lot of orders that all are going right back out. So, I mean, and mm-hmm. that's just, you know, I mean, that's just stuff you deal with, you know. And then even space, there's been deals that maybe we potentially could have taken, but then we need maybe more space to take it, or the timing wasn't right. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, there's so many variables and things have to line up. And sometimes it's timing, sometimes it's, and, you know, sometimes it's probably a good thing, right? Like I said, I made those other mistakes, and, you know, if a deal doesn't line up and if a deal doesn't work out, it's not like there's not more deals right around the corner. And then, you know, sometimes too, on the flip side, we had, you know, a large, and, you know, typically too, when I'm selling, I'm dealing with the actual founder entrepreneur, but this was a larger company mm-hmm. and everything looked great. I went out there for a site visit. They loved the site visit. Everything was great. And then they said, okay, we're looking to decide by X date. And then, you know, I met with like a supply chain manager because it was a larger company, so not a founder. And then the deal basically got killed with bureaucracy, you know, because corporate just couldn't, or the higher ups just couldn't make a decision. And then eventually the decision was just to stay with the status quo. So, I mean, you could look at stuff like that as a, but that's just, mm-hmm. it is what it is, right? What can you do? Mm-hmm. So you move on. So, I mean, all these things, I guess, are obstacles, but at the same time, you learn from all that, and yeah, I could point out all the things that haven't gone right, but then there's a whole lot of other things that have also fallen right into place just the way they needed to. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. And, you know, you take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Well, I would agree. So you are really the founder of the company. You're also really the head of sales because that's what you love doing so much. Do you foresee a time where that's just not going to be feasible for you anymore and you're going to have to just, you know, be out there growing the company?
It's hard to say, right? Like, you know, I know a friend that works for a company that's massive. Like, they have like 13 million square feet. And if you can imagine how large that is, they have like 6 sales reps. So in the industry, mm-hmm. right, it's not that type of industry where you have like a large sales team and you have mm-hmm. all these people. And I was on, it's funny, because I refer deals out that, you know, are maybe not the right fit for us or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm on the call. And I was on a call, and this was like a much larger company that we weren't ready for. And I referred them to someone, a massive 3PL, and their revenue is over $1 billion, right? And so we're on the call.
Prospect.
No, the 3PL.
Okay, got it. It was over a billion.
Yeah. I mean, they have other they have another arm to their business, but just in general, right? They've been around 20 plus years, and the founder was on the sales call, and the brand was literally like almost fell over in his chair, and he literally told the story of the company. He started the company 20 plus years ago and grew it massively and told his whole story. And again, he was just like the mouthpiece. He's like, okay, I have my subject matter expert, this person that handles A, B, and C, and I have another subject matter expert that handles A, B, and C. And I'm just on the call, right, as party to the deal. But I'm listening to this, and if you could see the reaction from the brand, is like, wow, the fact that you even took the time to get on this call after
right, the
all
CEO
you've
of a billion-dollar company, exactly.
Yeah, and it was just powerful,
so
right?
Smart.
So again, it's hard to say, but it's like, you know, if you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work type of thing.
Right.
Like not like I don't enjoy talking to customers or prospective customers.
Well, no, I get that. I mean, that's certainly not what's behind my question at all, Dave. I'm just, you know, as you grow and scale your company, is that still going to be something that's feasible for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably have maybe different systems put in place, right? Or maybe people assisting. And I already do to a certain extent, but it's like, I've also, you know, I could tell you another funny story. And I don't want to like say the name, but so in, you know, I have a podcast, I do a lot of podcasting, I meet people. Mm-hmm. So I met someone via the podcasting, and they had a tech company, and it's a tech type product that we use, but they had a competing offer, and we had a very good relationship, and he was telling me all about his service. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I get it. Right. And he's like, hey, can we do a demo? And because the relationship is so good, I said, sure. And I was open to look, even though I was satisfied with his competitor solution. And again, I had the relationship with him. He had his sales guy, whoever this guy was, do the demo. Right. And listen, I critique, because again, all I've done my whole life is sales. So I'm always evaluating.
Yeah.
This guy was so terrible. And I'm literally like, give me a reason to buy, right? Show me. And I'm asking real questions. Does it do this? Does it do that? How does this work? And this guy was terrible. And if there was a deal there, he totally fumbled it. So then again, I look at that in my mind, and it's kind of like there's nothing that's as powerful as the person that's started the company or has been there all along and helped build it and really has conceptualized the vision. There's nothing as powerful as founder-led selling, in my opinion. And not saying you don't have to be smart and build systems and outsource what it makes sense to outsource, but at the same time, from a sale, particularly when, in our case too, like ideally you land a big brand and you service them well and they stay with you forever. So it's not like the actual sale is so critical to the relationship. So I look at that piece of it, and it's kind of like, not anytime soon would I step out of the way.
Yeah, I love that, you know, and what you're talking about, I think, is really two sides of the same coin, because so often companies cannot scale because of what you're saying, because the founder's in there selling. I've got somebody right now that I'm working with, exactly the same. He's exactly that problem. He's the CEO of the company. He's doing all the sales, right? And he's got all these other problems inside his business that he cannot manage effectively. Right. And, you know, I really think it depends on the company and what you're doing. And you're never going to get as big as, you know, SAP or Salesforce. I mean, can you imagine Mark Benioff getting on a call with his customers? I mean, I imagine he may at the very highest levels, but I'd be surprised if even that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to
passing judgment on that either way. I think the fact that the founder of a billion-dollar 3PL got on a call is awesome. That he made time to do that. Good for him.
Yeah. It was eye-opening, at least from that perspective, because someone that had grown it to that level. And they do a lot of manufacture. They actually started as a manufacturer, and then because they had built such a robust logistics network, they started the 3PL because, oh, we should sell this because it's so good. That's literally how it happened. But Yeah. And again, I think it depends too, right? With systems in place and, you know, we have a team huddle every morning and we talk about everything, priorities for the day and who's doing what, but and we have a very good team in place that, handles what they're supposed to handle. And so I'm not necessarily putting out fires all day long. And oftentimes too, right? If everything's running the way it's supposed to, I'll have time to sell. And, you know, again, I even have to check in sometimes because there's no, like, people aren't necessarily updating me or calling me with problems. So I'll want to know how did this go? How did that go? And everything's handled and I find out a lot of stuff and great. And, you know, so like you said, it depends on the company, depends on what you do, it depends on your team, depends on your stage of, you know, company life cycle, et cetera. But yeah, I just, that's my experience and why I think that founder-led selling is so powerful.
Yeah, I love it. How would you say over the past 3 years since starting the company, you have really evolved your own workplace?
Oh boy. I mean, again, right? It's just dealing with challenges, problems, issues all the way around. And yeah, listen, our workplace is still, you know, it's built on respect and we want everyone to be a strong member of the team and do what they need to do. And I guess we've just grown and it's evolved. And as we've gone through these challenges, I mean, I think you really see who people are. And we've, you know, we've certainly hired some of the wrong people and we've seen the fallout from that. But we've really, really hired the right people also. And that we've seen the flip side. And it's like, wow, like how powerful the right person is. has been good. And, you know, we work with a recruiter for the higher level roles and that's just been like gold, you know, so, and then again, gone through several consultants and we have a phenomenal consultant that's been with us for a year and a half now. But, you know, again, right. You live and you learn, you got to make mistakes sometimes to figure out the right way to do things. But I mean, the you know, the North Star has been constant in terms of what we're trying to build. And we're just continuing to, you know, I guess, see the evolution of that. And yeah, I like where we're at right now.
I love it. Is there anything that you think is still missing for you? Like you said, you know, you've got, you know, great search person that you're working with, which is for especially for me, who spent 30 years as a professional headhunter. I love to hear that because that's the exception, not the rule. And, that you've got a great consultant. Is there anything that's sort of missing, do you think?
Is anything sort of missing? You know, it's hard to say. It's, I don't know, right? Again, right, as we continue to grow and as we'd add more pieces, more positions, maybe. But yeah, nothing jumps out right away as far as what's missing.
Good. Well, that's great. Dave, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you want to leave us with?
You want to talk about my podcast? Maybe ask me why I started a podcast. You could do that.
Sure. I'd be happy to give you a plug. So your podcast is called the Beyond Fulfillment Podcast.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, so I started this 2 years ago, and it's really funny because in the very beginning, the very early stages, I had a really tough time. I was falling on my face a lot. And trying to learn this industry and how it was different from where I came from and the right moves to make after making all these mistakes. And I found that the most valuable pieces of learning that I got were these conversations with other founders, other entrepreneurs, whether they're in my industry or not. And I had a lot of networking calls. I'd go to a lot of trade shows and I meet all these people. We talk.
Sure.
And one day the idea hit me is like, wow, if you started a podcast, you could have these conversations, make them public, and then the audience could hear, they could benefit, the guests would get exposure, and it would help you get exposure. It's a true win-win. And
just
so,
like I do. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew nothing about podcasting. I asked my team. I said, I got this idea. I have a marketing team I work with. I said, what do you think? They said, it's a great idea. Let's do it. And so we literally jumped into action right away, came up with a name. I started recording over Zoom with no equipment. I said it's a podcast, and I just never stopped. And we've published 220 episodes.
Nice.
We've grown the YouTube channel. We've got 13,000 subscribers on YouTube. We're ranked in the top 2% on Listen Notes. And like I actually did a post about this. I think it came out today. It's just kind of mind-blowing because I was so like, whatever you want to call it, not qualified, like the last person you might expect to do a podcast. And because I just, because I just did it, I believed I could, and I kept doing it, and that consistency over time.
Like,
you wouldn't believe some of the entrepreneurs that, like, the high-level CEOs and founders that reach out and say, hey, can I be on your podcast? And
I love it.
I mean, just titans of like this one, I don't want to give it away too soon, but I mean, he lost $50 million in the 08 crash and then made it all back. And he was talking about the mindset, and he's like, let me show you how I even had $50 million to lose. And it's just like, he's worked with Tony Robbins and all these titans of business. And again, he reached out, can I be on your show? So it's just kind of mind-blowing at times as far as what that can turn into if you believe in an idea, you put in the work, you stay consistent, and keep doing it. So that's what's up.
Awesome. Is there anything else I neglected to say?
Well, if you're an e-commerce brand and you're not happy with your 3PL or you're fulfilling yourself and it's a headache, you want to take the headache out of logistics, check out easydc3pl.com. Central location in Kentucky, nationwide fulfillment, a great team that actually cares about you and your business. And if you want to find out more, just email dave at easydc3pl.com.
Dave Gulas, co-founder and president of EasyDC 3PL. Thanks for being with me. This was fun.
Thank you, Carol. Really appreciate it.